A cold coming we had of it. Just the worst time of year for a journey, and such a journey. The ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. And the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, laying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces, and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out and the lack of shelters, and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end, we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a water mill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky. And an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again, but set down. This set down. This. Were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here, in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death. In poetic form, T.S. Eliot tells us the story of the journey of the Magi. And if you know of the poem, then you also know that it speaks of Eliot's own journey to faith. He borrows the opening five lines from Lancelot Andrews' Nativity Sermon. By listening to the poem, you discover that there are two layers of understanding, because we're reminded that often through gospel literature, there are multiple layers of understanding to be sifted through. Each gospel writer presents the story of Jesus as they understand it, and as they would particularly want groups of people to be challenged by what is said. There's often more than a simple story to be grappled with, and instead metaphor to be wrestled with, that those hearing and reading might grasp something more of the God story. That's the case with the story of the Magi this morning. There's more to the story than a journey from east to west to meet a child. In some way, we know that even before we reread the words, for the opening chapter of Matthew with its genealogy hints quite strongly at the necessity of outsiders to the Jewish faith being of importance in the continuing of the God story. For in amongst the great names of Jewish faith, there are stories of adultery, incest and prostitution, folk from other paths of life, all important in the bringing into being of the royal lineage that would connect Jesus to David through the man who would claim him as his earthly child. So setting out on our journey with the Magi this morning, we are to be prepared for a story that meets more than our ears, but instead reaches to the core of our being and questions the journeys we might make. The Greek historian Herodotus suggests that the Magi were a sect of Medians living in Persia, which at the time of Jesus' birth was under the rule of the Parthian Empire. The Magi were scientists, priests, astronomers and astrologers, and were almost certainly Zoroastrians. In the ancient world, Zoroastrianism would have seemed similar to Judaism. They believed in a creator God. They had a personification of evil and a day of judgment. And as a core religious belief, they held the need to offer aid to the poor. The journey that the Magi make from Jerusalem and then on to Bethlehem was one that would have taken several months. And so perhaps there is a secondary reason for the journey of the Magi. They'd seen a star that suggested that a great ruler had been born. And with the tensions between Rome and Parthia, would such a journey have offered the opportunity for a dialogue with another leader and thus prevent further war? It's speculation, but it suggests that there is more to the Magi's journey. They would have seen the world in more than a spiritual lens themselves, and it offers an opportunity to see the journey as also a political one. If the Magi followed the main trade route from Persia, modern-day Iran, they would probably have used horses to cross over mountainous and rocky terrain. Then they switched to camels when they reached the desert. Their journey is not in secret, and so they take the same main route that would take them up the Euphrates River through what's now Iraq, crossed over the Syrian desert, passed through the Jordan Valley, finally arriving at the gates of Jerusalem. From what we know of Herod, we know that the Herod they meet is a paranoid and sickly Herod, one who has already thwarted attempts to replace him on the throne. He's known as bloodthirsty. He's killed his first wife and several of his sons. He's not a Jew like the Magi, and so he consults Hebraic scholars so that he might discover the prophecy of a Jewish leader to be born in Bethlehem. But it's only then he shows his true colours to the Magi, because he asks to meet them again in secret. Honest dealings are never made in the open. And there he gives the Magi directions, asking that they might let him know where the child is, that he might go and meet this new leader. The meeting of the Magi and the Holy Family is one of many contrasts. They're of a different race and religion. The elite and aristocratic Magi must have found Mary and Joseph peasant-like, having come from the richness of Herod's palace. The house that they meet Mary and Joseph and Jesus in would have been simple by comparison. Yet despite that contrast, the Magi recognise with clarity the potential of the child before them. They present gifts with the benefit of hindsight and the benefit of faith. We understand, speak of the varying roles that the child Jesus would take on in adulthood. The gold spoke of his kingly status, that in adulthood would be mocked, as in his last hours he wore a crown of thorns. The incense spoke of Jesus' priestly role, the bridge between ordinary humanity and God, while myrrh told of Jesus' death, a sign that God had a plan which would only take place through this child. So in the Gospel of Story, we've encountered a physical journey. We discover a journey of knowledge, as each of the elements of the story allows us to grasp something more of who Jesus is. But we have one more journey to encounter. There's one more layer to the story in what we've heard this morning. Had we used the words of the King James Version, then we would have heard, "And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh." The significant word in all of that was worship. There's a sense in the gospel that the journey that the Magi make is also a spiritual one. They grasp that there's something extraordinary about this child, and they worship. Of course, we know that in the ancient language, a royal figure was paid homage to with that use of the word worship. We use it ourselves today when we talk about people in the court, and judges might be referred to as your worship. It's an element of homage, of respect. And so we can't necessarily see it as an experience of a conversion moment, but there's that sense of spirituality within worshipping the Jesus child. We've not heard this morning the result of what happens when the Magi choose to journey home another way. But for us, it's there hovering in the background, because we know that as far as Herod is concerned, this is a real threat to his power, and he orders that every child under the age of 2 should be killed. We know that the Holy Family flee to Egypt to await Herod's death before they can return. It's that final part of the story that probably leaves us with more questions than answers, as we look for an explanation of why choose one over so many. And while we may not understand the choice, perhaps we do understand the knowledge that God was there. In every one of the journeys that's made in the gospel story, God was there. Just as God was there in the physical journey from east to west, he was there in the journey of knowledge. He was there in the spiritual journey. And because we know that, then we know that God is also there in the journey of pain and sorrow, in the journey of seeking answers and resolution. When we struggle to hear good news in the world around, perhaps it's the assurance of God present in every journey, including those of pain and sorrow and those of answers and resolution, that we seek for our world today. I wonder which of the news headlines for the beginning of this year has struck you. There have been a few unsettling items if you've been listening to the news for the last few years. We know that the nurse who has Ebola is in a critical condition, and our thoughts are with her and her family and with the many people who struggle with Ebola. We think of the families who have lost loved ones in the tragic Air Asia crash, who are seeking answers as to how it happened. And this morning there is the news of those who've lost their life off the coast of Scotland as they've made the journey from the mainland to the islands. And our thoughts are with them. And perhaps some will be asking, where is God in all of these situations? We know that that's a story that unfolds before our eyes as we see care being offered and new understandings of disease encountered. We see it in the response of care that a whole community is offering as it seeks to embrace and uphold the loss and grief of those who've been bereaved. We see it in the midst of vulnerability and grief, because love is at work, recreating and offering new journeys to be made. Sometimes we see it in the midst of time. Sometimes we don't see it in the present time because it's us that's affected. And instead, we only see it when we travel back and think of the journey we have walked from a past event. But however we encounter God with us, God here, that encounter reminds us of the hope to look at our present situations and find signs of God's love at work, because he's found in the hands of aid agencies and peace workers and caregivers and ordinary people, as each struggle to reform communities so that they offer the best of life for all. Perhaps the biggest journey we will make like the wise men, is the journey between the contrasts of our life, both personally and spiritually, as a community and alone. Because when we walk that journey, we discover that there's always a new route to take us back into the certainty and the assurance of God's love for us and for the whole of creation. Amen.